Welcome to America's Commercial Real Estate Show, your source for market intel, forecast, and strategies. Hello, I am Michael Bull, and I do appreciate you being with us. This show this week is brought to you by my company, Bull Realty. If you'd like to buy, sell, or lease commercial real estate, land, or multifamily in the Southeast U.S., check me out. Check out my company, bullrealty.com. You can reach out to me directly, michael@bullrealty.com. Well, today we're going to talk about the office market, which is what I like to sell a lot of office buildings, mainly around the Southeast, but sometimes all around the country. And it seems like a lot of people, especially reading the press, think that all office is dead and it's dead forever and no one's going to want to be back in the office. But we're starting to see some green shoots. We're starting to see a little bit of positivity in places about the office market. But what's really going on? Let's find out. Please welcome my guest. It's Phil Mobley. Phil is National Director of Office Analytics with CoStar. Phil, good to see you, sir.
Good to be back, Michael. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. And I love the beard. It looks perfect today, you know?
Yeah, well, it's, I don't know, my wife likes it, so that's why I wear it.
That's what counts. Happy wife, happy life, right?
Amen.
Well, Phil, as I mentioned, it seems like a lot of people really feel like the entire office market is in trouble, and it's going to be for a long period of time. Where do you see, you know, we've ended the first quarter here of 2024. What do you see for performance at this point overall?
Yeah, so I mean, I think if you look just overall at the headline stats, things still look pretty rough in the occupancy market. We saw vacancy continue rising in the first quarter, another nearly 20 million square feet of negative absorption. So that's got our overall vacancy rate, the way we track it at CoStar, at about 13.8%. And that's, you know, a record high. Every quarter is kind of a new record high recently. I do think that, you know, we're starting to see what office product is struggling the most, kind of what and where. So to your point, you know, it's not really, there's no such thing as the average office building, right? There are differences in location and quality and the type of business that a particular building may be majority supporting. And all of those things matter. But I think as we look ahead, you know, in general, we still think this has more to play out. I was looking at some numbers today on leases that were outstanding at the beginning of the pandemic, so through the first quarter of 2020. About 20% of those leases are still outstanding, but they represent about 45% of the square footage that was outstanding and therefore is still outstanding today. They haven't faced an expiration date. And it's actually it's a little bit more pessimistic if you look at large leases. So leases 10,000 square feet or more, almost half of those are still outstanding, and they represent over half of the square footage in those leases that are still outstanding. So we think we still got a ways to go again overall, and there are differences in the market that I think we can get into.
Yeah, and let's do that a little bit if you can, Phil. Start us off kind of geographically. You know, where, what cities, what markets are maybe struggling a little bit, and which markets seem to be doing better?
Yeah, so this is still largely a major market phenomenon, and I think that's in part a function of the type of companies that tend to occupy space in our biggest markets. It's big Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 occupiers with, in many cases, multiple locations, a lot of square feet, a lot of employees. And so those are the ones that have been rationalizing their footprints the most. And so therefore, those big markets, those top really 50, you know, once you get outside the top 50 markets, then things look reasonably stable. But, you know, top 10, top 20, top 50 to varying degrees are all still struggling to maintain occupancy. So I think that's the geographic story. There has been certainly a dynamic where central business districts have suffered more. I'd say in the last year, you know, there hasn't been as much safety in the suburbs. My take on that is that's largely about just employment growth slowing down. We've had some really strong, even blockbuster jobs reports on the overall, on the headline number. But if you dig into that a little bit, and you look at the major office using categories, so your professional services firms, your banks and financial institutions, your technology companies, other information sector organizations. Well, employment in those sectors in the aggregate is essentially flat over the last year. So we don't have a lot of growth in kind of the knowledge workforce. And I think that's one reason why we're seeing, in general, the suburban areas, particularly in those top 20 plus markets, are struggling to maintain occupancy to an even greater degree than they were, you know, maybe a year or two ago. That should pass eventually. But I do think in our major markets, in our central business districts, we do have, you know, a couple or three more years of this playing out, you know, barring anything unforeseen, there's always things that can change.
Hmm. What are some of the trends you see, Phil, related to the size leases tenants are doing? Do you see, as a percentage-wise, more of them decreasing their footprint? What do you see there?
So for the last year and a half, it's been pretty consistent. We've seen the average new lease size about 15 to 20% lower than it was in, say, the second half of the 2010s. So we interpret that as an adjustment of floor plates, of requirements, really, when those pre-pandemic leases do roll over. So as companies experience those expirations, we see them as taking an opportunity to rationalize their footprint. In part, those that move by taking less space on a new lease. You know, we also see behaviors like consolidating into pre-existing locations. Some of the big tech companies are moving from leased locations into already owned locations. So that's a behavior that we've noticed as well. But I'd say the overall trend is just this rationalization, right? It's a testament to a couple of things. One is that there's actually commitment to the office, but two, it's a commitment to the office supporting the workers we have today, and not necessarily the ones that we expect we may have. It really does seem to be that the increase in hybrid work arrangements, it has been more catalyst than cause. And what I mean by that is the hybrid technologies, the technologies that enable us to do, for example, what we're doing right now, you know, having a conversation across the miles. Those technologies also enable occupiers to kind of apply the lesson that recessions teach, which is that you shouldn't acquire space today that you're not going to need until tomorrow. Of course, when you have to acquire that space on a long-term lease or through buying a property or something, it's hard to apply that lesson. But the technology that enables more flexibility allows them to apply that lesson. So their employee headcount can move up and down a little bit, and they can leverage that technology to keep from having to commit to more space in the near term. And that's what I think is going on with these footprint rationalizations.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So, we're seeing signs and hearings from some folks that the tenant traffic, that the tours have kind of picked up recently, I guess, when you look at 2024. Do you guys see anything in your space that shows that the traffic's increased or is normal as far as tenant traffic?
Yeah, in fact, we do see certainly an uptick from the trough right after the pandemic and the number of leases that have been signed. So those leases have been smaller, but there have been just about as many of them as we saw in, say, 2019. That maybe have ticked downward slightly in the last couple quarters, but for most of 2023, that's what we saw. So yeah, I think there is something real to the amount of traffic that's out there. It can be encouraging and also deceiving, right? So it's deceiving because those tenants do tend to have smaller requirements. In fact, part of what's going on is, I was looking at this with a colleague earlier today, is those tenants in general are taking leases for shorter terms. But if you look at that on a size of space basis, then the average amount of term for a, you know, say a 10,000 foot lease or a 5,000 foot lease is not really all that different than it has been historically. It's just that there are more of those smaller leases, smaller requirements in the market. And so those smaller requirements tend to be associated with shorter terms. And so, you know, on, from that standpoint, it can be a little misleading. But I think the encouraging piece of that is that there is activity, right? There are occupiers out there who are making long-term commitments to space. And so if you can find who those tenants are and what their requirements are, then, you know, you can do well if you have a competitive property.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're signing, I think, 3 leases today as brokers with clients, and one of them is a 15-year lease on 12,000 square feet freestanding, and so a good long-term lease. And then, but then we had another one that just say, you know, we're only going to give you the 36 months. I'm like, landlord's like, okay, let's do it. You know,
that's right, yeah.
So it's interesting to see, and it's a wonderful time for users, right, for tenants to that are leasing to maybe upgrade their space to attract more employees to be in the office. It's also a good time for users to consider buying properties. Are you seeing any of that in your numbers, Phil, that some of these buyers are actually companies that are going to use the space themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I can think of one example of that being the CoStar Group. So we did that earlier this year, just outside of DC and in Arlington, Virginia, where we bought a building. So definitely a trend. So if you look at the recent transactions of office buildings in the capital markets, then users or occupants have been involved on the buy side in about a quarter of those over the last year. And that's about double the share that we would have seen in, say, the late 2010s. So definitely a trend of users taking advantage of the opportunity to buy space, you know, at, to them, what looks like favorable pricing. There's inherent value when you're going to use the space. And as Andy Florence, our CEO, said after we acquired the building in Arlington, say, look, we're going to use this space. There's value to us. And down the road, we very well may sell it, you know, when market conditions change, and we may, it may turn out to be a very strong investment for us. So that's certainly a trend. So you're seeing something that we're seeing too.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I've used CoStar's purchase of that building to explain to users, hey, you're concerned about office. What do you think CoStar does every second of every day? They track the market. There's the smartest analyst and economist in the world and related course of real estate. There's one on my show, Phil Mobley. And CoStar's buying office. I think if you use office space, it might be something to be thinking about. I think it's going to be the best. It's going to be the highest returns for investors buying office, in my opinion, in 2024. For example, we just put a foreclosed office building on the market, 73,000 square feet, that someone can buy for $57 a foot. Own it, not rent it. It's in pretty good shape on a pond. You know, it's a great suburban Atlanta market. So it's amazing what some of these folks are going to get into purchase price-wise. And so what are you guys seeing, Phil, related to cap rate trends on office properties today?
Yeah, so a great question and a complicated question because, you know, going back to this theme that there's no such thing as the average office building. One of the ways that I like to track this is with our repeat sales index, which we actually just published a week or so ago for the first quarter. And if you look at all office transactions, right, so over the recent times, specifically repeat sales, right, so that's what our index is tracking, then, you know, on average, if you weight each one of those equally, so each deal represents, you know, one and they're weighted equally, then you get something that shows values down maybe about 10%. And it's pretty easy to attribute that to a cap rate rise attributable to the interest rate increases that we've seen recently, right? But on the other hand, if you weight those by the size of the deal, so value weighted, then you see a very different story. So I remember talking with you, Michael, I don't know, a year and a half or so ago, and suggesting that we thought the peak to trough could be as much as what we saw in the aftermath of the Great Recession, which was about 30% on average. And so the value weighted repeat sales index shows that we're already there and past it. The values are down for the biggest deals by 35% or so on average. We actually think there's more to go for the same reasons as we think there's more shakeout to happen in the occupancy market. So there's a real fragmentation here. If you're looking at medical office, if you're looking at single tenant net lease office, then yeah, values are off a little bit, and you can attribute that to cap rates that are up a couple hundred basis points. But if you're looking at the sort of institutional grade office product, and particularly if you're looking at distress, well, then the cap rate becomes much less relevant, right? And it's more about price per pound. Those who are still interested in buying product like that, including, yes, some users, as we were talking about a minute ago, you know, they're thinking about this in terms of a basis play and what's the discount they can get from peak, or, you know, I've heard phrases like discounts to outstanding debt, which is a little bit scary to think about. So there really is a fragmentation in the market right now, along with, of course, just a lot of illiquidity. When you have a situation with investment grade property and values doing what they're doing now, there's not much of an incentive to sell until you have to. So we're still certainly seeing illiquidity in the market.
Yeah, those are some good points. And, you know, on the leased properties, the single tenant net lease, and some of the very stable properties, the government leased properties we sell, the medical office buildings we sell, you know, we're seeing basis points changes on cap rates going up from anywhere from 50 basis points, depending on the asset, to 200 basis points in our business in the Southeast U.S. And so it's interesting to see some of these single tenant properties are still selling at cap rates, and some of the nicer properties at cap rates that are so low that it may surprise people, right?
Yeah, sure. And it's going to depend on what the use is, what the opportunity, like if for a medical office building, for example, there may be an opportunity to come in and grow NOI in much the same way as we've seen with industrial property, for example, over the last couple of years. For others, if you have a corporate headquarters type building on a 15, 20, 25 year lease with a lot of that term remaining, you know, you may not see too much cap rate compression, but on the other hand, may not see too much expansion relative to the peak in values a couple years ago either.
Yeah, you have good points. And as you started off the answer to this cap rate question, every property is very different. And you want to look at every property. If you're a lender, or a lender partner, seller, whoever you are, look at each building very independently, and each tenant and each lease. So it can be very different. We're seeing we've got one under contract at about $375 a square foot right now, and it's not a huge trophy building. It's a nice building, but then we've got, you know, building for sale $57 a foot. So to your point too, it comes down to maybe a price per pound, you know, on a lot of these sales at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about the risk of the future income stream, right? And so when you have a major market, multi-tenanted office building that has increasing vacancy, that has, you know, relatively low attendance among at least a few of the occupiers who are still there, that's obviously a very different situation than if you've got a, you know, corporate headquarters with a steady stream of people coming in and out of the building every day.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. When investors and lenders walk through a building that's apparently leased, but there's not many people there using it, they get a little concerned. Especially,
no, they're not going to give you credit for it, right? Like, you know, even if it's leased, if that expiration is coming up in a couple years and there's nobody in the space, the lenders aren't going to give you credit for that.
Especially if the lease was consummated before COVID, right?
That's right. Yeah.
If it's after COVID, we see a little bit more flexibility there. So that's interesting. So we're talking with Phil Mobley. He's the National Director of Office Analytics with CoStar. And Phil, when you look at the performance in the first quarter around the country, are there any markets that kind of jump out that they had a relative, some sort of change in their performance, like in Miami or New York or Atlanta or San Diego? Anything kind of jump out as a change?
I mean, We've seen relative strength in some of the high growth Sunbelt markets. The biggest examples being Miami and Houston, both of which have seen, at least in the last 5 years, I think this has slowed somewhat, but they've seen some corporate in-migration. We've seen places like Dallas, at least on the demand side, hold up reasonably well. You know, I think the supply side in Texas markets is often a challenge because, you know, they're low barrier to entry markets, and that's part of what makes them high growth. So if you look at Dallas and Austin, especially, you see a lot of supply side pressure. But then you look at some smaller warm weather markets, Las Vegas, Nashville, some pretty resilient demand there. Even places, some of the secondary Midwestern markets like St. Louis are seeing the same kind of thing, Cincinnati. So there's definitely resilience. And again, I think a lot of this goes down to who tends to occupy space in those markets. You know, Nashville's maybe a counterexample because you've got big companies like Oracle making big announcements that they're going to move to Nashville. But in, you know, a Cincinnati or a St. Louis, your tenant base is going to tend to be more local and more regionalized. They're going to tend to have a more consistent idea with how they're going to use the space than perhaps some of your Fortune 500 occupiers that are spread out across major markets.
Yeah. And Phil, one thing that would seemingly help the office performance and valuations are kind of supply dynamics. Now, I know some buildings, office properties are getting torn down. You know, some office properties are getting converted to other uses. And then, you know, new supply, I assume, is starting to slow down. What do you see in those areas and what's the impact there?
Well, it's just beginning to happen, really, there. I mean, there are a handful of markets, including Boston, where I sit. I already mentioned Austin, that do have a pretty significant supply overhang coming online pretty soon. But the longer term trend, and it's already happening in some places, is that, you know, the new supply deliveries are going to fall off a cliff here in the next 18 to 24 months. I think that the first quarter was the lowest amount of new construction starts for office that we have on record at CoStar. And 2023 was the lowest amount since 2010, just over 30 million square feet. So the implication of that is that, you know, we're going to run out of first generation space by, say, early 2027. It's going to be around 1.5% of inventory instead of the 2.5 or so that it represents now. And that really does matter at the margins because it's that first generation space where, at least on the net, all the lease-up activity, all the positive demand activity is occurring. So by, say, late 26, we could have a really interesting situation where, you know, it's almost a landlord's market at the top end of the market for this brand new premium space, but then everything else is struggling to backfill. And we're already seeing that, you know, that it's the new construction that's taking demand away from pre-existing buildings, and those buildings are just having a real struggle backfilling the space. So it's kind of a zero-sum game right now, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out when we start running out of that new construction. How far down the quality or the age scale does that demand start to filter? I think we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I would share with the audience, you know, that I lead a team that sells office buildings. And one of the things that we found is that the tenants with smaller suites are extremely active in most of their spaces. And these little small businesses with like 1,200 to 3,500 square feet, when we sell these buildings, they're in there, they're using them, they're active. Then we show the buildings and tour the buildings with very large suites, full floor and larger, is where we have some of these companies that just aren't using their space as much. So it's kind of curious because you see a nicer building almost empty and a not so nice building with smaller suites kind of full. Does anything jump out there in a way which what you see in the market, Phil?
Yeah, well, I think a couple of things. One is it's getting increasingly difficult, I think, for some of us to understand each other because Again, I'll go back to this one more time. There's no such thing as average. So if you look at something even like attendance, you know, Castle System shows we're in the low 50s on average. But what's happening is maybe 3 years ago, most buildings were between, you know, 40 and 60, and that was the average for that 50%. Whereas now you've got a bunch of buildings and a bunch of suites within buildings where it's, no, we're at 80, 90. Like it's very much kind of old normal in here. But then in another suite or in another building, you've got 10 or 15%. And so you might have a similar average, but things are bifurcating. They're spreading out. That's playing out in some really interesting ways, because you do have this phenomenon of high use tenants that may be perfectly happy to be in a low class B building, right? They may have made the decision to occupy there because they are cost conscious, and that's the segment of the market they're playing in. Whereas for some of your major global, multi-location occupiers, they're not really price sensitive in that way. They're thinking more about, you know, having the best possible workplace for their employees. And yeah, they're certainly cost conscious, which is one reason they're going to new construction, so they can get the landlord to help pay for the build out that they want. But the implication for that is if you're a market or a landlord with some kind of what I'll call commodity class A property, that's not terribly differentiated, it's at least relative to some of this trophy product, then it's hard to keep that space full because you're too expensive for those high use occupiers that are really price sensitive. But you're not differentiated enough to attract some of these major occupiers that are really forward into this high-performing workplace mentality. So in some senses, that's almost the worst place to be. You know, you'd almost rather be, if you're not at the very top of the market, you'd almost rather be down market a little bit where you could compete on price with tenants who are already price sensitive and choosing space on that basis.
Yeah, I saw that firsthand last week where my daughter has a degree in environmental economics, and she is saving the world one building at a time, doing carbon footprints and all sorts of things that I don't even understand near as much as she does. But she's saving the world one building at a time, but she has really loved, since COVID, working at home. She's a workaholic, and she likes the efficiency of the non-commute. However, she told me last week that they moved into a new office building, and they have a view of the water. It's beautiful. And she did a complete 180 on me. She says, "Dad, I try to go to that office every day, spend as much time as I can there. I love it there because it's just beautiful. It's warm. It's everything I want it to be. And I get to see people that I work with." And so it was interesting to see someone that's 25 years old go from, "Love working home, I'll never work in an office," tell someone they got the right space, they're like, "Oh, I want to be here.
Yeah, it's really fascinating because, and we've known this for a while, but it turns out the thing that people like least about commuting is commuting, right. Not about the office itself. So something I was looking at the other day is you have to get below the sort of gateway market level. But once you get into secondary markets, so if, let's take Nashville or Austin or Charlotte, North Carolina, for example, those markets, and again, this is coming to a resolution soon, or at least a slowdown soon, but right now, they have so much multifamily housing in the urban core areas of those towns under construction that in a couple years, those markets are looking at a 30% increase in mid and high rise apartment units on the market. And I think that has tremendous implications for the overall health of those downtowns, including the office buildings, right? Because if you have more density of people moving around those urbanized areas, and it's not all downtown, but, you know, walkable kind of live, work, play type areas, then I think that bodes well for the future of the office buildings that are components of those ecosystems, right? It's a lot harder to execute that, at least on that scale, in the gateway markets for a variety of reasons, just higher barriers to entry, just more land constraints, what have you. But, you know, in our secondary markets, they really are going to be transformed. And they're not waiting to convert offices to multifamily. They're just building the housing, right? And I think that's going to impact, by shortening the commute for a lot of those workers, it's going to impact the health of the office markets there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm curious about New York. You know, everybody is familiar with New York, the city. What do you see for performance there in the office world? How's it trending?
You know, it's so large. It just really is on another scale from just about any other market in the country that, you know, it sort of behaves in general a lot like the nation as a whole. I would say you tend to have longer lease terms there. You tend to have larger lease sizes there. And, you know, in some respects, I think they have pulled forward some of the impact that I was talking about earlier with, you know, a couple more years of lease expirations coming to the market that's going to impact occupancy. But, you know, New York is one of those markets that has a lot of sublease availability that is pulling forward some of that. So I think New York is, you know, maybe closer to its reset than some other areas. Interestingly, I think San Francisco is probably even closer because I think there's just a sense that things have happened so dramatically that it has just mentally reset the market, right? And people are kind of accepting of different values, different levels of rent. And so I think San Francisco has maybe pulled forward even more of those effects of the next couple of years.
Phil, let's leave the audience with this. Your thoughts on opportunities, maybe opportunities for developers, investors, lenders, tenants. Where are some opportunities out there?
Yeah, so I think a couple. So one is the owner-occupier situation that we were talking about a few minutes ago. There is value out there, and there are more occupiers now, I think, that are open to the idea of controlling their space through ownership. So I think that's one. Another would be related to that, you know, that shrinking of new supply. So if you can look at a market or a submarket or a neighborhood, and you can find a part of town or a city that is really undersupplied in terms of first generation space, then, you know, if you can somehow pull together the financing to put a building up that that will really be unique in the market, then I think there could be opportunity there. It's a little bit of a higher risk play, but we're definitely going to have situations where there are areas that just have a dearth of premium space, and, you know, there are companies that would maybe like to be in a particular city or part of town and just won't be able to find space that meets their needs there. So, you know, I don't give investment advice, but those are just a couple of things that I see as, you know, opportunities that some others may see for ways to make office work.
Yeah, those are good points. And we see the same thing. Owner occupants, it's a great time. Maybe you'll find buildings that you couldn't have bought before. Obviously, the larger the building, the cheaper pricing that we're seeing. So you might find properties that you couldn't get before. Also, you might have such a low basis that once you move your business in there, you've created some real instant value to either you know, sell immediately or finance or to just keep on the book. So I think it's a good opportunity. And obviously, I feel it's a good time for tenants to be in the market, right? Maybe they get in that city they've been trying to get into and get a much better deal, a much better space, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you have a good handle on the way you're using space and what your needs are going to be, and I think more and more companies do, then yeah, absolutely a good time to be a tenant in the market.
Yeah, and it's also for the stress buyers. I think the office market is a great opportunity. We're listing more and more foreclosed properties and office properties every day here at our shop. And so it's a good time if you're a user or an investor. And if you are a lender, hey, it might be a good time to look at multiple ways to work out that loan. And one of the things that we're seeing is a lot of these lenders are selling the notes and taking pretty huge discounts and leaving all that middleman profit for note buyers. And to note buyers out there, I apologize for this, but I think some of you lenders, you might want to look at short sales involving the current borrower. If the title's clean and there's no junior liens, it need to wipe out. So I think there's opportunities for lenders. Another opportunity, I think, Phil, tell me what you think for lenders is, you know, this might be one of the best times to do safe loans, you know, in our careers. I mean, if you look at the low basis, you have less competition. Hopefully you don't have a rate risk on maturity. Hopefully you don't. So it's a good opportunity to build relationships with your current borrowers, of course. But I think some of these lenders could develop some great relationships with actually new borrowers because of the less competition and higher rates. And what do you think there? Am I out of line?
if you believe in the asset, right, that I think, you know, there is a lot of workout activity. There's a lot of extension activity going on. But that's all coming at a cost to the borrowers, right? So the lenders are, I think, being conservative, even if they are maybe, you know, subordinating some of their position or something, you know, in an effort to try to keep the borrowers on board. But yeah, again, if you believe in the asset, then I agree with you. I think the challenge is going to be, where's that level of risk? Where's the threshold at which you think, you know, the asset has a future, or it has a future as something other than office, or at least something other than a multi-tenanted office.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting when you can get into a market where maybe you're buying at $50 a foot and everybody else is in it at $150 a foot or more. Seemingly you could outperform the market just with the lowest rents in town. So yep. I know one we're selling, we could be the cheapest rent in almost the entire city and make a really nice return because the basis is so low.
That's actually one reason why we think that there's going to be downward pressure on rents. We haven't seen a whole lot of that, at least on face rents. We know effective rents are down because of higher TI packages. And then, of course, inflation is making real rents lower than they were. But that phenomenon that you described, Michael, is something we see bringing rents down further. It's already happening in San Francisco, for example, in San Jose, in Seattle, where that situation has started and is beginning to reset the rental market.
Okay. Well, anything else you'd leave our audience with, Phil, to think about for office market?
I think we've covered it, Michael.
Awesome. Phil, you are fantastic. Thank you, sir, for being on the show.
Yeah, always a pleasure, like I said.
All right. And thank you for joining us around the country. Please let us know what you think. And hey, look, if you know anybody wants to buy, sell, have workout problems with a loan on an office property or any property, you know, we sell REO, we help with workouts, let us know. You reach out to me. If I'm not the right guy, we'll get you the right person to help you out, or the right group. Reach out to me directly, michael@bullrealty.com. And I love office. I know everybody thinks office is dead. I think it's going to come back faster than people think. I think demand is going to increase as these companies realize the detriments of work from home and work from anywhere, from the IT issues, the security issues, the trade secrets, the turnover, all the challenges can come with people spread out. And then I think demand is going to continue to increase over time. We're going to have some buildings torn down. We're going to have some buildings change to other uses. We're going to have new supplies, Phil just mentioned, starting to dwindle. So I think this could turn out a little faster than people think, especially for some assets. So if you have any assets you want to talk about, give me a call. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. Until next week, be sure that you always lead, learn, and laugh. And join us for America's Commercial Real Estate Show. America's Commercial Real Estate Show is brought to you by Bullitt Realty. For commercial brokerage sales and leasing in the Southeast U.S., contact our show host by email at michael@bullrealty.com. By Commercial Agent Success Strategies, 21 incredible one-hour agent training videos. Learn more
at commercialagentsuccess.com. And by Lument. For senior housing, healthcare, and multifamily financing, visit lument.com. For more podcasts and videos, subscribe and visit creshow.com.